from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. On Friday, the Obama administration issued what it called significant guidance to all public schools, saying they must allow transgender students to use whatever bathroom and locker room matches their gender identity. Sports teams, Greek life, everything in the public education realm covered. Defy the guidance, and big money, federal support, is at risk. Transgender and civil rights advocates celebrated. Some parents and lawmakers are concerned, seeing an imposition on the privacy of their students. How will this work? This hour on Point, transgender rights in public schools. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you ready for this? Is it the right thing in civil rights terms, in terms of humanity? How do we assure dignity for all? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is Dominic Holden, reporter with BuzzFeed News. Dominic, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom.
There was a Court of Appeals decision, Fourth Circuit, last month that factors in perhaps to why this rolled ahead. What was decided there? What's the significance of it for what was unveiled on Friday, Dominic?
So the case in the Fourth Circuit came ultimately out of Virginia. There's a transgender boy there who had been banned from using boys' restrooms by the school board in Gloucester County. He had lost at the initial trial court level when he sought an injunction. It went up to the Fourth Circuit Court. And what the Fourth Circuit Court found was that the U.S. Department of Education indeed enjoyed the deference to interpret Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972. And they banned discrimination on the basis of sex. And the Education Department has interpreted those rules to also ban discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And so that protects transgender students in schools. The Fourth Circuit did not ultimately decide the meaning of Title IX, but they did send the case back to the trial court and said the education department may interpret Title IX this way, and that bodes very strongly for the transgender student and the education department's right to interpret Title IX this way.
This is a big piece of guidance, significant guidance, they call it, from the Department of Education Justice. It clearly wasn't made up just in the last month. From all the reporting I see, it wasn't. What's the origin of this significant move, Dominic?
Right. So what this guidance is it is for the first time the Department of Justice and the Education Department explicitly telling school districts and public universities around the country what transgender students' protections are under Title IX. But this is by no means the first time that this has been communicated in one form or another. There have been settlements going back as far as 2013 in which the Education Department has pushed individual school districts into settlements when they discriminated against transgender students, banning them from single-sex facilities like restrooms and locker rooms. There have been settlements since then in Illinois, and this is part of a broader trend legally interpreting laws concerning discrimination on the basis of sex. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, for instance, has interpreted Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which bans discrimination on the basis of sex in the workplace, to also ban transgender discrimination. So it has been implicit for a long time to these school districts that they're not allowed to discriminate against transgender students, but this is the first time it's been spelled out in such detail.
We have some states, of course, pushing back already, and we will look at that. But lay out for us, the first headlines out of this were, you know, bathrooms in school will be affected, but it's much more than just bathrooms. And I think people first got the idea that this was just about K-12, but this is all publicly funded education right up through university level. Is that right?
This applies to any education institution that receives federal education funds. And that's right. It doesn't just apply to bathrooms. It also applies to school dances, for instance. It applies to sororities and fraternities. Ultimately, the interpretation of Title IX is quite broad. And, you know, what we've seen is that the vast majority of schools that encounter issues with transgender students appear to be abiding by this interpretation already. Even though this guidance itself is new, school districts have been doing this on their own, sometimes with a nudge from the education department for a while. So this doesn't actually represent a change in practice, but it has been taken as an affront by certain governors.
We'll come back to bathrooms, which have had has had the most reaction here, but describe, like, in practical terms, what would it mean for school dance policy? I'm not sure I even follow that.
Right. So if a student is a transgender girl, then that means
at birth a boy, but now identifying as female.
This is someone who is assigned male at birth and now identifies as female and her gender is female. Mm-hmm. And if a school district knows that and she is attending a prom as a female, as a girl, and has, for instance, a male date or a female date, that the school couldn't ban her from that dance or require that she wear male dress or generally require that she conform to male dress codes at all.
Sororities and fraternities. I mean, right in the name, you have gender reference. They're not themselves supported by, very often, I guess, by university, though in some cases there may be some kinds of support. How might it affect sororities and fraternities?
I can't exactly speculate on how this would play out in every instance, but I think that the implication here is pretty clear, which is if you are a transgender man, you can't be banned from a fraternity because you're transgender. And if a school does try to ban a student, then that would jeopardize their Title IX funding, and the Department of Education may intervene.
Sports teams. Same there. If I'm, a transgender guy in college, let's say a transgender female in college that is assigned male at birth, but now in college, as female, I can be on the women's basketball team?
I mean, if you're good enough to play, you can't be discriminated against on the basis of your gender identity.
Okay.
So if you are a transgender man and you want to join the rugby team and you meet all of the same standards that all of the other players meet, then absolutely you can play on the rugby team. Conversely, if you are a transgender woman and you want to play on the women's soccer team, they can't ban you just because you were assigned male at birth.
I mean, this could get interesting. You know, 6'10", bulky, male at birth, now transgender female in college. I could see teams, competing teams saying, what's going on? On the other hand, you've got very big, strong, fast, muscular women of all kinds on those teams. Let's go to the bathroom issue. How does it work? Let's just start with K-12. How does it actually work? Is it clear how someone begins or is there even a process? Or do you just show up at school one day and go to the bathroom of your choice? Do you have to, like, talk with the school administration about it, make arrangements, or how does it work?
According to the guidance, a student and student's guardian would discuss the student's gender identity with school officials.
Okay.
And once they have done that, they would then be able to participate in school activities that correspond with their gender identity. But the guidance also says that there's no medical validation that is required. They don't need to produce a birth certificate. Mm-hmm. They don't need to have gone to a doctor. They can simply begin living that way and using the bathroom that corresponds with their gender identity. And I think that, a number of people have raised concerns about whether there would be a boy who would simply claim to be a girl so that he could peep on girls in the locker room, which is something that's come up along the presidential campaign trail. It's been raised by a number of conservative organizations. Right now, that is a speculative scenario. There are no known examples of someone doing that. And given that there needs to be some sort of consultation with the school before that would happen, it is difficult to imagine a scenario where someone who has followed these rules would be able to go into a locker room for that purpose. And if they were to be leering at somebody, if they were deliberately making someone uncomfortable, that would also violate existing rules. So it is difficult to see how this would be abused. The concerns are understandable. People want their kids to be safe.
Yeah.
The question alternatively might be, what other standard could be used other than gender identity? And if you did require people to use You know, if you mandated bathroom access solely on birth sex, you create this sort of irony in which you would have transgender boys, people who live as boys, who have facial hair, who are sometimes on hormones and present in every way as a boy, walking into the girls' bathroom because they're mandated to based on their birth sex. And that, ironically, creates the very problem critics are trying to avoid, which is boys in the girls' bathroom.
What about the other way? Could you have a transgender girl, let's say in high school, with male genitalia sharing locker rooms with other girls?
Whether or not someone has undergone any sort of operation to change their physical body is not the condition on which someone's gender identity is determined.
Oh, I understand that.
But there are a number of transgender people who do not go through any sort of sex reassignment surgery, and it is particularly rare when you're dealing with minors. So yes, you would have transgender girls who had not had sex reassignment surgery, who were using facilities that were in accordance with their gender identity. I think the question is, you know, does that actually pose any risk? Does that violate people's privacy? I think that depends on the standards at each school. Generally, students do share quite a bit of do have quite a bit of privacy in a lot of these facilities. And I don't know any examples of a transgender student trying to impose their physical appearance on other people. As a general rule, transgender people are fairly shy about their physical appearance and try to be very respectful.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new guidance from Washington that all transgender students in public schools, elementary right through university, must be accommodated with the bathroom, locker room, sports team, everything that matches their gender identity. Dominic Holden, reporter for BuzzFeed News, is with us. You can join us as well. Are you ready for this? And ready or not, is this a civil rights issue we need to embrace? What was your first reaction to this new guidance? What are you thinking now with a couple days to mull it over? And how do you think this will go over, be accepted or resisted in your children's school? A whole range of reaction to this we've heard just in the last couple of days. Here was Allison Gill, vice chair at the Trans United Fund, telling NPR this weekend that those who say these laws will allow sexual predators into women's bathrooms offend her.
As a trans person, it just feels like it's hard not to take it personally when people are comparing trans people to child predators or saying that we're somehow dangerous for using the bathroom appropriately.
On Saturday, day after the new guidance, the 15-year-old star of TLC's I Am Jazz, that's Jazz Jennings, who is transgender, thanked the Obama administration via a video on Instagram for their actions allowing transgender students to use the bathrooms, locker rooms that match their gender identity. Here's Jazz Jennings.
I was not allowed to use the girls' bathroom for 5 years. I had to use the nurse's bathroom. And, you know, I was reminded that I was different every single day. I didn't understand why this discrimination was taking place. But now I could use the bathroom of my preferred gender, and that is just absolutely amazing. And so can kids, transgender kids all across the country. And I absolutely just applaud you for making a difference and helping people like myself.
But no applause from some states. Texas Republican convention was going on. Republican Senator there, Ted Cruz of Texas, still out on the stump, no longer in the race for president, but still very much involved, railed against the Obama administration's new guidelines.
The president issued a decree to every public school in America demanding that they change their bathroom policies. Demanding that every public school now allow grown men and boys into the little girls' bathroom. We have entered the world of politically correct lunacy.
Okay, there's Ted Cruz. He's out of the race. On Friday, Republican Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas responded here to the new guidance on transgender students' public bathrooms. He said, no compromise. Texas will fight it.
We will not be blackmailed by the president's 30 pieces of silver. We will not sell out our children to the federal government. And the people of Texas and the legislature will find a way to find as much of that money as we can if we are forced to.
The money he's talking about, that can be withheld by the federal government, and we're talking about a lot of money. In just a moment, we'll talk with a principal who's already implemented this kind of policy about how that's going. Dominic, talk to us about money enforcement and the legal challenges that are already up on the rails or maybe coming to this. First, with Title IX and the federal government, if a school just does not implement this policy, what happens?
Well, I mean, again, I want to go back to this idea that the vast majority of schools already do implement this policy. And when schools have fallen out of line, they've been pushed into settlements by the education department. So this does not represent the big change that Ted Cruz is arguing that it does. One of the conditions of federal funding is that you comply with rules under Title IX. So, for instance, if a school were to ban girls from school entirely or not provide them equal opportunities that boys get, they would also lose or risk losing federal funds. In the case of gender identity, what we've seen right now is a lawsuit in North Carolina, a set of them, in fact, in which the state is suing the federal government and the federal government is suing the state over a state law that bans transgender people from accessing restrooms that correspond with their gender identity in government buildings and schools. And there is this question of whether or not the state is going to be cut off from federal funds. What the White House said last week is that while the litigation is still active, they are not going to withhold funds. Realistically, I am skeptical of the idea that the federal government would actually withhold funding as a general rule.
Really? Even if all of Texas says forget it, no school in Texas is going to follow this, they'll just take that?
You know, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but I will say that, you know, the federal government funds things that it wants, that it supports. Mm-hmm. And part of this funding for schools, for instance, is breakfast and lunches for low-income students. Mm-hmm. So cutting students off from those funds would be politically extremely unpopular. And I can't help but wonder that the federal government would explore all of its other legal alternatives before it cuts off money for education.
Let's go to a principal of a school where this is already the way. Principal Thomas Tom Aberle joins us from Louisville, Kentucky. He's principal of the J.M. Atherton High School. Has a transgender student non-discrimination policy that allows students to use the locker rooms and restrooms in accordance with their gender identity. Had it since 2014. Tom Aberle, Principal Aberle, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity.
Why did you implement the policy in the first place, sir?
Well, right before spring break in 2014, a staff member notified me that we had a student who had confided in him that the student was going to transition and wanted to communicate with the school administration on what that would look like in the way of use of name, use of pronoun, and ultimately use of school facility.
Yep.
I contacted our district's general counsel. We didn't have district policy on it at the time. Frankly, I was not exposed to this issue. I don't think I even knew the term gender identity at that time and had to do some homework on our own. Our 12-member site-based decision-making council, which is a school policy-making body, came together in multiple public forums over 2 months and reviewed the evidence and made the decision to not only include gender identity in a non-discrimination statement, but also to include it under a use of school facility policy.
This student was transitioning male to female or female to male. Which way, Mr. Aberle?
It was identified male to female,
and
as a gender-identified female.
And did you share this policy change or this policy clarification with the entire school community? Was everybody in on it? How did the parents, teachers, students respond?
Right. It was, at the time, there weren't a lot of schools that I knew of that had dealt with this issue. So we were kind of making a decision that we felt was the best way to communicate with our students, staff, and community on a relatively unknown issue. And ultimately, you know, what our council was learning to do is apply common sense to a relatively uncommon issue for our community. So the first thing I did was communicate with the family of the transgender student to understand what their interests were, what their desires were, because frankly, the families are often going through as much uncertainty as we the school were at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I then sent an email and a letter home with students saying that The current administration has made the decision to allow transgender students to use the facilities of their gender identity, as well as a link to providing some information on what that meant, and then also to invite our school community to come to our site-based decision-making council meetings that would be discussing and reviewing this. And we had actually several lawyers come and present before our council, including one from Alliance Defending Freedom. So we had one pro, and one was a transgender lawyer, and then another one was one that represents our Kentucky Association of School Administrators, who is just kind of neutral.
Alliance Defending Freedom has been opposing this. We're going to hear from Jeremy Tedesco in Phoenix with them in just a moment here. How long have you been in school administration and teaching, and was this the first time that you've run into this, Tom Eberle?
Right. I've been a high school administrator since 2001 and principal here at Atherton since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, right, until 2014, I don't know that gender identity was ever a term that was ever in my professional vocabulary. And my only knowledge, like many people, with what transgender meant was things I'd picked up from TV shows and movies.
Yeah. Do you expect that now that this is the law of the land, it's getting a lot of exposure? Do you think you might have it might increase the number of cases or students and their families who come to you with this circumstance because they'll feel more free to do that? Or does it feel to you as though this is likely to remain quite rare?
From what I've read, and I think I think Dominique nailed it with everything he was saying. What he was saying is exactly the types of things that our council had reviewed and thought about and considered in understanding accommodation versus discrimination, providing access versus compelling behavior or restricting access.
Mm-hmm.
And, we understand that people are uncomfortable with change, and in this case, it really is a change in people's perceptions of traditional gender roles and identity. We were looking at it as this is a paradigm shift in our understanding of gender norms, which is it's bringing to light to the public of what this really means in accommodating students. But we still have only found it to be a very small percentage of the total population. Since our implementation a couple of years ago, we've had a half dozen or more students who've communicated to staff and administration that of their gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
But to be honest with you, we don't keep a binder that has pictures and
yep.
names of
yep.
all these kids. It's really so natural; it's a non-issue in our school.
I see that. How have the classmates of this student dealt with it in the locker room? How's that? This is a student who's gone male to female, and now under your policy has been accommodated and full access to the therefore girls' locker room. How is that working? How are the students with it?
Right. The vast majority of our students are very supportive. We're a school that prides itself on diversity and seeing that as a strength as opposed to a weakness. We have a variety of religious backgrounds, of sexual orientation, and now gender identity as one of those things we recognize as a way that we may differ from one another. But we have, kids and parents and communities who are ready to stand up to say that, we value all human life. This is the right way to treat a person. And it's a matter of people coming together in really respectful civil discourse on an issue they may be uncomfortable or unfamiliar with and educating themselves on it. The students, do not see it as an issue. They think it's hilarious that the cameras keep coming in and,
TV
taking
crews.
Video yeah. of the male and the men's and women's signs on the bathrooms. But it's just not an issue. Even within the locker room during that transition 2 years ago, it was not an issue.
We're going to hear in just a moment from Jeremy Tedesco at the Alliance Defending Freedom. A couple of callers here first, if I may. Tom Eberle, Dominic Holden, stand by. Sarah is calling from Champaign, Illinois. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. Thanks. I love the show.
Thank you.
I'm a retired school teacher. I'm a high school teacher, and then I became administrator at a high school.
Yes.
And I don't see, I don't see that it couldn't be all solved for everybody if they just had unisex bathrooms, like they have in a lot of places, little small restaurants and stuff. You have a lock on the door. You go in and use the bathroom, and the guy's waiting outside. He comes in and uses the bathroom. Who cares? And in locker rooms, have a place that's private for people, all people.
Yeah, but Sarah, how bathrooms can be in high school. They can be crowded places with a lot of traffic between classes. I mean, you might have to build an awful lot of single,
potty rooms there and have kids lined up in the hall waiting to get in.
Well, when in a woman's bathroom, you're probably not very familiar with them. They always have doors. Well, have doors on the urinals too. I don't. It doesn't matter. It just makes the facility fit the situation, not the people.
Sarah, I appreciate your call. Principal Aberle, do you feel the need for a change of physical infrastructure to accommodate this, or is the traditional layout of a high school, let's say, restroom or locker room, work all right with this to your mind?
Right. No, I really appreciate and respect Sarah's opinion on this. This is something we did consider at the beginning. You know, from a standpoint of increased privacy, think about it for all students. You know, there's lots of students who may desire increased privacy in using the facility for going to the bathroom or for, you know, changing their clothes. And we can provide that for any student. You know, you look at it in a context of how we provide accommodations, increased privacy, increased safety for all students. But honestly, I do really want to comment on this issue because a lot of people did say, oh, you must not have thought, why don't you just let them use the restroom in the front office? And here's something I'd like to say. What do we tell those children? What are we telling all our children about the value of human life when we say that there's something so different about you that makes other people uncomfortable that you're the one who's going to have to change your behavior? Not that the people who are uncomfortable can seek additional privacy, but that there's something so freakishly different about this child, you know, K through 12 or beyond as adults, that we compel them to behave a different way.
Are you worried? The thing raised in North Carolina in the debate there was that sexual predators would come in across gender lines here and, you know, opposing as transgender and harass girls or boys or males or females in the bathroom. Do you see any issue with that in your high school during the course of a regular school day? What happens if you have basketball games at night? You've got, you know, adults and in significant numbers there as well. Is that an issue?
Right. No, absolutely not. You know, I've been in contact with the L.A. Unified School District, thanks to BuzzFeed, actually. We received national attention a couple years ago, and all of a sudden I went from almost no resources to overwhelming resources from all around the country. And the L.A. Unified School District contacted me and said, hey, we've been doing this for 10 years, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Here's our policies. Here are some, you know, our input. We'd be happy to address those issues. And that idea that all of a sudden these, you know, big, hairy biker guys are going to be walking in next to little children is not at all what we're trying to talk about when you address gender identity. I truly understand the concerns for student safety. That's applied to all kids at all times in this building. But really, there's no precedent in the many schools and the many court cases where this issue has been addressed for over a decade that this procedure poses any greater threat to student safety.
Quick call, Chris in Toronto, Canada. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi. I just have to take exception with what the gentleman just said. With all due respect, there should be accommodations made for transgendered students and transgendered people who require facilities. But with all due respect, this is a very, very, very small minority. This affliction affects 0.3% of the population.
What's the significance of that, Chris? If it's a small number, should we just write it off, write them off?
Well, the significance is we're trying to reinvent the wheel to basically accommodate and make this very, very small population feel, you know, like they're normal. The fact is that this is classified in the DSM as a disorder. So you're doing them a disservice to say, well, you know, you're okay, you're normal like everybody else is. Like, I'm sorry if it sounds callous, but, I mean, I've heard people advocating to drop the sex designation on government IDs so as not to make people who suffer from this affliction to feel more normal. I mean, this is going off into an extreme that you can understand some of the pushback from some people on the political spectrum.
Yeah, Chris, we've got it. I got a short break right here. We're going to come back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the new guidance from Washington that all transgender students in public schools, elementary right through university, be accommodated with bathroom, locker room, sports team, everything that matches their gender identity. We have a principal with us today, Tom Aberle, in Louisville, Kentucky, at J.M. Atherton High School, which already has this policy. He says it's working fine for them. Dominic Holden is with us from BuzzFeed News. Jeremy Tedesco joins us in just a moment. You can join us. What is your question on how this will actually work? How do we respect everyone's rights and dignity here? Transgender and gender-conforming kids, both. What are your fears here? What are your hopes? And are we ready to surface, to live with, deal with the fluidity of gender? Last week on Monday, the Justice Department sued North Carolina over its controversial bathroom bill enacted in March, pushing back on all this, even before the latest step. This was Attorney General Loretta Lynch, who came out very strongly saying that this is a fight, it's a battle over human rights.
This action is about a great deal more than bathrooms. This is about the dignity and the respect that we accord our fellow citizens and the laws that we as a people and as a country have enacted to protect them. Indeed, to protect all of us.
Loretta Lynch, matter of principle here. On Friday, apparent presidential nominee for the GOP, Donald Trump, told NBC's Today Show regulation of public school bathrooms should not be up to the federal government.
Let the states decide, and I think it's much better as a local issue. I don't think it's a federal issue where the federal government gets involved. And I see what's happening, and it's become such a big situation. And you know what? Everybody has to be protected, and I feel strongly about that. But you're talking about a tiny, tiny group of population. With that being said, everybody has to be protected.
How are schools and kids going to handle it? This was North Carolina Republican State Rep Craig Horn, concerned about the new guidance from the Obama administration.
Well, there certainly could be a safety issue. I'm not ringing the bell of fear, but I have to be concerned. Kids are kids. We do crazy things.
State Rep in North Carolina. Well, that last part is true. Kids are kids and can do crazy things. Tom Aberle, Dominic Holden, please stand by. With us right now from Phoenix, Arizona, is Jeremy Tedesco, Senior Legal Counsel for the Alliance Defending Freedom. It's a group that is involved in two different lawsuits, Chicago and North Carolina, trying to prevent this type of policy from being implemented. Jeremy Tedesco, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me on. And it's not that we're trying to prevent these kinds of policies from being implemented. It's that we're trying to protect the privacy rights of students whose rights are being trampled by the implementation of these policies. I mean, that's the voice that's missing here, is the voice of every other student at the school. Schools have a duty to protect the privacy and dignity of every student at school. And our position is there's a compassionate path forward that accommodates everybody's interests in these intimate settings. And you can't just grant access to a student who views themselves as the opposite sex without understanding that you're implicating and trampling the privacy rights and other rights of students within those locker rooms and restrooms. And so, you know, we can accommodate students who, for whatever reason, are uncomfortable using the facilities that are designated for their biological sex.
Jeremy, lay that out for us. What is the offense? What is the offense to dignity and respect of other students that you're worried about here, exactly, in practical terms?
There's constitutional right to bodily privacy been established in the courts for many, many decades. Has been established in the locker room context. There's reported cases saying that including the opposite sex in restroom and locker room facilities does two things. It immediately is a violation of the right to privacy, and it also creates a hostile environment for the sex of the person who's supposed to be in that facility, for that the facility for who that's set aside for. So there's been cases that have said putting a man into a woman's locker room, where women, of course, are in a state of undress, changing clothes, doing things like that, immediately creates a hostile environment that violates sex discrimination standards. So how can the Obama administration be telling school districts, you have to insert men into women's locker rooms, boys into girls' locker rooms, because of Title IX, when that's actually a violation of Title IX because it creates a hostile environment for those women, I can tell you.
So you're not accepting a differentiation between a boy and a transgender boy, or a girl and a transgender girl. Those are the same thing to your mind?
Well, recognize that. It's biology is how these things have always been handled in these kinds of facilities, precisely because it's biological differences that our law has always recognized, and recognized especially in these kinds of settings where privacy is an expectation of people, like restrooms and locker rooms and shower rooms, that biology is what drives the analysis here. It's not someone's perception of who they are. It's what their biological and anatomical characteristics are. Those things are not something that change depending on how you perceive yourself to be, at least for the people that are impacted by having the opposite sex person in their restroom.
Well, of course, I mean, those things could change depending on how a person presents themselves in the gender identity they've adopted.
But you have to understand that these policies don't require any of that. In fact, the other side completely resists it. And the Obama administration's directive said you can't ask any questions. So it doesn't matter what you look like. The only thing you have to do is perceive yourself to be the opposite sex. Identify that way and self-identify and verbalize that. And no one can question that. And so, yes, there's going to be various gradations of people who use these policies to get access to the opposite sex restrooms. But it's not just someone who looks like the opposite sex. It's not required.
Dominic Holden, how is this issue of bodily privacy being addressed by the Justice Department with this latest guidance?
Well, a couple things. I want to first respond to something that a caller said earlier. He said that the DSM defines being transgender as a disorder. The DSM does not actually define it as a disorder. It says that there's a problem when people who are transgender are unable to live in accordance with their gender identity.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
The Justice Department, I don't know that they have addressed the privacy argument specifically. Instead, they have been advancing this legal interpretation of both Title IX and of Title VII to say that discrimination on the basis of sex is discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And one of the problems that people run into is this question, you know, as Jeremy and his organization point out, is that if asserting this guidance is essentially a federal overreach. While there has been a legal trend in employment and in some courts, it has not been decided by the Supreme Court. And so there are questions about what Title IX and Title VII do mean about sex and gender identity.
What about, I mean, we're very attuned in this conversation so far to transgender rights, and rightly so. That's the issue on the table. What Jeremy's raising, Dominic, is the rights of the other students there when it comes to privacy and a perceived offense to privacy, bodily privacy there. Is the Justice Department acknowledging that, or they're saying that has no standing in this conversation?
At this point in the litigation, particularly in North Carolina, where I think we're going to see some of the most detailed fleshing out of these arguments, there have been complaints filed, but there have not been reply briefs. So it will be interesting to see how the government responds to that. I guess one of the questions that has been brought up again and again is how would it be enforced if not based on gender identity? One of the arguments that Jeremy brought up is this question of biology. Does that mean chromosomes? Does that mean that somehow someone's birth sex is going to be identified using a birth certificate? Where do intersex individuals go to the restroom? Biology is fairly unclear, and how you would enforce some other measure at the restroom door is unclear. And so I think many people have moved towards gender identity because an individual is able to self-identify where they go.
Let me take it to Jeremy. Jeremy, how do we handle gender ambiguity and fluidity in your view of all this?
The question is, what does the law require? The law requires no sex discrimination, and Title IX, the law that says that, specifically says that schools can have separate facilities, locker rooms, restrooms, and shower rooms for boys and for girls. And Title IX has always been understood for its 40-plus history to refer to biological differences between men and women.
But that's exactly what's on the bubble here, right, with the court decision.
So the point of my comment is two things. One, the Obama administration is radically redefining what the statute's terms say, and it doesn't have any authority to do that. So that's one of the claims we're raising in all of our litigation, is that this is a completely lawless reinterpretation of Title IX. My second point is more, I think, responsive to what you're asking, which is, look, this is the way our society, in every society, really throughout the course of human history, has regulated these kind of areas based on biological sex. So this whole idea that, it's going to be impossible to make sure that the biology is the way that these things are done in our locker rooms and restrooms, that's the way it's always been done. That's the way a society who understands privacy, concerns about common decency and respecting people's interests of dignity and things like that in those kinds of spaces has done it. So
I get that. There's a lot of history here, but there's also an evolution of perception at the same time, right? Let me get a caller on this point. Lisa in Buffalo, New York. Lisa, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment. I think that this issue, both on the conservative side and the liberal side, they're taking two extremes, and they're not thinking somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
On both sides.
Okay.
I think the topic of public restrooms, like at the Target store, where adults have the choice of whether or not they want their children to use it, maybe
mm-hmm.
they go someplace else or stop shop in the store, whatever their choice is,
yep.
That's possible. And I think that the notion of, you know, maybe a predator is sitting in there, you know, they're going to do that regardless. But when it comes to schools, and I think it's with the liberal perspective, they've gone off the deep end, because it's a very wealthy suburbanite approach and thought to think, oh, well, they'll just build separate restrooms or make it extra private. Some of these schools are struggling just for books.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're struggling just to pay their teachers, and there's no privacy. And if I have a daughter that is in a school where they can't afford to separate and make it private for each student,
yeah.
and you have a child that was born with male genitalia but feels female and is transitioning but hasn't gone through
surgery.
The physical surgery and is not shy about their bodies, well, then doesn't my daughter have a right to not be exposed to the male body until she is with her husband? And it has religious implications too, that she be exposed to the male body before we are ready for her to be exposed in that way. I think that you know, the liberals need to look at it and look at it wholly before implementing laws to, quote, protect, because in their efforts to try to protect, they're not actually protecting.
Lisa, we've got it. Tom Everly, respond to that. I mean, I know you're not a lawyer here, but you've dealt with it in the field. And you hear Lisa's genuine concern there.
Right, Lisa. I appreciate it. You're right. The courts have repeatedly found that this is not about casual or unfettered access between genders to use any facility of their sexual desire. We allow students to use facilities of their gender identity, so it's important to think about what that means in a very practical, real-world situation. I do encourage people to just truly reflect on the many years you've been using restrooms. How often did you see the genitalia of your neighbor? You know, even in locker
rooms. In a locker room, plenty. You know, plenty. Plenty. In school.
Okay. And I went to an all-male school as well. And in those type of situations where you have like one shower with six heads coming off
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, those do create in a situation where you have exposure. So that's when you get into, all right, so what does that mean for each facility? How do we increase privacy for all students? And I told, you know, I did tell when this first became an issue 2 years ago, I said, this is not going to be about an issue of exposure. If you turn this into an issue of exposure, it becomes a disciplinary issue that I'll deal with. So, you know, once we do have to realize that it's not about having to defend, going straight to this issue of having to defend that we should be exposing everyone's genitalia. Really, in the public setting, when you walk into a restroom in a movie theater or a grocery store or whatever, you don't know mm-hmm. who you're standing next to. But in a school, it's much more private. It's much more intimate. We know these people over a long period of time. We know their families over a long period of time. You know, my recent experience with transgender individuals is that they do not take their transition lightly. This is a very serious, life-changing experience. And the children and families of these kids are just looking to find a quality education in a safe environment and to be treated with respect.
Jeremy Tedesco in Phoenix at the Alliance Defending Freedom. How do you picture the legal challenges to this movement, this guidance, playing out or going forward?
Sure. You know, and just the principal's comment, we obviously agree with you that the people who are asserting these rights are very serious about them, and we want those people to be taken care of and accommodated and their interests to be met. But we also have to take into account, we filed a lawsuit in Illinois on behalf of 63 students, 130-plus plaintiffs, over the privacy, Title IX, and other violations of putting a boy into the locker room of the girls where they are changing every day of the week for gym class. And so, you know, I expect there to be...
Again, you say boy, they might say transgender. They would say transgender girl, but point taken.
Yeah, he's biological male in the girls' locker room. That's all we really need to talk about to understand the legal claims and threats to their privacy rights in that context. I expect to see a lot more litigation. We've been on the front edge. We filed the first case of its kind in Illinois. We also filed a case in North Carolina that's part of all the litigation there with the DOJ in North Carolina. We represent parents and students of college and K-12 schools in that case. We're going to be filing, I'm sure, more cases in the near future on this issue. And the point of our cases, one, is to protect the privacy and rights of the girls and boys in these kinds of intimate settings, but also to make sure that the Obama administration cannot just redefine statutes. Congress makes laws, not bureaucratic agents.
Dominic Holden, do you think we're moving past biology here and into identity when it comes to the courts? Is that where we're headed?
I think the courts are going to be talking about this a lot more. In the meantime, what we do know is that there's a lot of harassment and violence against transgender people. And while this debate plays out, if people stigmatize them as sex predators, then there will only be more hostility. And we have to look and compare who are the victims right now. Transgender people are routinely being harmed. We don't actually have examples of sex predators in bathrooms.
Dominic Holden with BuzzFeed News in New York. Principal Tom Aberle at the J.M. Atherton High School in Louisville, Kentucky. Jeremy Tedesco with the Alliance Defending Freedom in Phoenix, Arizona. Our thanks to all three. You have helped us look into this new realm so well today. Thanks to all three. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.